OIT. Esta guía permitirá orientar la institucionalidad pública a cumplir con sus obligaciones en consulta a los pueblos indígenas sobre el tipo de desarrollo que quieren alcanzar. Siempre en el tema de derechos humanos, quiero recordar que Guatemala, tras 36 años de conflicto armado interno, firmó la paz y quiso darse una tarea más ardua: construirla. Este conflicto, condicionado por la polarización ideológica internacional, producto de doctrinas políticas ajenas a nosotros, dejó graves secuelas que debilitaron las instituciones del Estado, impidiéndoles prestar los servicios requeridos por la población. Reconocida nuestra debilidad para emprender nosotros el camino, acudimos a la Organización de las Naciones Unidas y fue así como, a nuestra iniciativa, celebramos con la organización el acuerdo para establecer una Comisión Internacional para la Impunidad en Guatemala, denominada CICIG. Esta experiencia, que es única en el mundo, tiene un importante mandato, por lo que se hace necesario su fiel cumplimiento, no solo en lo que a nosotros respecta, sino en función del Estado de Derecho. La comisión comenzó a funcionar en el año 2007, habiéndose pactado en un principio una duración de 2 años, periodo que ha sido prorrogado 5 veces. El último empezó el 4 de septiembre. Esta prórroga, que yo anticipadamente firmé, es muestra de nuestro más firme propósito: fortalecer y apoyar la comisión para que alcance el fin de trasladar sus capacidades a las instituciones del Estado, sin ningún tropiezo ni entredicho. Para lo cual, también mi administración ha hecho un significativo incremento presupuestario al sector justicia, incremento sin precedente en la historia del país, con el propósito de que Guatemala tenga un sistema de justicia fuerte. Mucho de bueno hay en el quehacer de la justicia, y precisamente por eso la respaldamos. Su límite es la Constitución Política de la República de Guatemala, las leyes de nuestro país y el acuerdo mismo. De lo cual nosotros, Guatemala y la Secretaría General de Naciones Unidas, debemos ser garantes de su observancia. Es un principio de la República que nadie debe entrometerse en la administración de la justicia, sea cual sea la forma de injerencia que se haga, directa o indirecta, mediática, o a través de cualquier acto que pareciere inconexo, puede darse como una afectación a la soberanía, y todo ello afecta el accionar del país. Nuestro gobierno está comprometido plenamente en la lucha contra la corrupción y la impunidad. Es por ello que hemos iniciado el proceso de revisión de la interpretación y correcta aplicación del acuerdo de CICIG, por lo que esperamos que con objetividad y ecuanimidad podamos perfeccionar, afinar y correctamente aplicar el cometido de la comisión, garantizando el debido proceso y la presunción de inocencia, y evitar a toda costa la persecución selectiva, la politización de la justicia y la judicialización de la política. Esperamos iniciar pronto las acciones pertinentes por ambos interesados.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de RTN, de Telesur, del colectivo Más Voces, de Radio de Naciones Unidas, del Informativo Farco, de Hispan TV, de Venezolana de Televisión y del diario La Jornada. A nombre de Toshkli y de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Hi, this is Uncle Dennis, producer of the Earth First Update, wanting to invite you to tune in to Free Radio Santa Cruz on Friday afternoons from 1 to 4:30, where we present environmental programs from around the world. Starting off at 1 o'clock with Radio EcoShock, we visit the world of changing climate. And at 2 o'clock, we go to Costing of the Earth from the BBC 4. At 2:30, we present Eco News, a report from the North Coast Environmental Center, produced at KHSU in Arcata, California. At 3 o'clock is the Earth First Update, produced by yours truly, bringing you all the environmental news you need to know. At 3:30, we present Terra Verde, produced at the studios of KPFA in Berkeley, California. And at 4 o'clock, Sea Change Radio. I'd like to invite you to tune in to any of all of these programs right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org.
Up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM, it's the Thursday, September 21st, 2017 edition of Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides. That's my show. It's going to be going for 2 hours. Most of it's going to be a flashback to August 5th, 1999, which is a show where there was a lengthy interview with Bright Tompkins of the Sentinel, a former reporter who gave us a kind of an inside expose of what it meant to be a worker at the Sentinel 20 years ago. It's probably worse now, at least in terms of the quality of the so-called news they put out. But we're going to be kind of scurrying through whatever we can because we only got 2 hours and about three-quarters of it is taken up with this show. If you want to catch the whole show, you'll be able to find it online, and we'll talk about that towards the end of the more recent segment. But let's hear a little bit of the intro, and then we'll go directly into the show.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
We're on the line with activist Katzenjammer Keith McHenry. For all of you 95-year-olds who have been reading the Katzenjammer Kids and the Funnies, Keith, what's up? What's been going on? What's cooking? What's coming up?
Okay, well, you know, there is rumor of forcing everybody that's living now around the post office over to San Lorenzo Park. So, this is a rumor, and this was people have said that the chief of police, Andy Mills, had come by, told people that they need to be aware within 2 weeks, which was, you know, sometime last week, that they have to move over there and they won't be ticketed at San Lorenzo Park.
What's the status right now at San Lorenzo Park? I've heard mixed stories. Do you have any current news? I know that you're kind of somewhat disabled and you don't get down as much as you might.
Yeah, well, I do hear people tell me this story that they could go there and avoid tickets. Then I hear from people that went there that they got ticketed. So that's not maybe the best situation. And then there's supposed to be a portable toilet there. I think that's true as to whether that toilet is really there for those people and as part of that. But that's the street rumor, you know, that there's now this toilet and it's there for us and blah, 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 and they want us to go down there. I suspect that there's two different things would happen. If this rumor turns out to be at all true, that basically what would go on is that there'll be another festival or something, like the one that where they kicked everybody out of San Lorenzo Park before the Margarita Festival, and therefore everybody will be moved again, and they'll be like, oh, wow, they moved everybody. Again, and it makes sense because there's a Margarita Festival. So,
we have rumors, I guess. I know I've written Andy Mills has been sort of responding to letters I've written. Again, I mentioned to you, I think when I last talked to you, that I interviewed him a week ago, and which people can hear online if they want to. Probably should post it on Santa Cruz Indie Media. We talked for about 25 minutes, half an hour, outside the event that you were the activity outside City Hall, last City Council meeting, when you were doing the Food Not Bombs table. And he, we began a sort of a He made some claims he was going to stop arresting people for sleeping, giving his officers instruction to only ticket upon complaint, which is a story we've heard for two decades in Santa Cruz. And, you know, it's what the police tell the politicians anyway, generally. That's what Rotkin told me as long ago as 1996, that the police only ticket if there's a complaint, or I think they had four other conditions, but for sleeping ban offenses. But he,
We had a conversation, a bunch of us, with Martin Bernal, the city manager, and we actually kind of cornered him on the complaint thing. And what he wouldn't 100% come out, you know, he was like trying to dodge the whole thing, but gave me the impression that basically he is the one, you know, there's a standing complaint from the city manager and from the city, and that therefore there is a complaint. Because he kept saying complaint-based, and we like kept, you know, trying to narrow down what that was, and he really strongly implied, but it would not come out say forthrightly, that basically he, you know, there's a complaint, and the complaint is that there's homeless people, and that the complaint's made by the city manager and whoever is, like, he's the puppet of, and therefore, you know, there it's complaint-based.
Well, I'm trying to get him very specifically to state what he wants to do and communications in writing, but, you know, that, of course, is like trying to hold on to a... It's very slippery and wet and slimy and hard to get a very firm grip on, but I'm going to keep reporting on that. What's been happening with Food Not Bombs in other cities? I notice in today's Sentinel, you probably saw the letter by our friend Richard Hertz, who wants
definitely
wants to get rid of Food Not Bombs. He claims there is evidence of photos of people preparing food while outdoors with no gloves, the filthy buckets of slop, and the lack of a proper washing station. What have you to say to this?
I thought a bit about that. So, first of all, and I actually have a letter into Dr. Lepp about this. He has actually complimented us, not in writing, but, acknowledge that we do have a washing station.
Dr. Leff, of course, is the chief health inspector for the county, right?
For the county, correct. And he's also been under pressure to get rid of us, and he is not cooperating with that. And we actually, there was an article attacking Food Not Bombs in the Sentinel for being somehow responsible for the hepatitis A epidemic by a person who typically writes op-ed pieces that essentially were saying the homeless should be killed and removed from the city. So interesting that they're let's kill the homeless, get them out of here, shoot them, what the fuck, you know, do something,
well, get
these homeless people. And then all of a sudden it's, oh, we're worried that the homeless might get sick with hepatitis A, we got to shut Food Not Bombs down.
What is happening with hepatitis A? How many folks are, in fact, contracting it, whether it, you know, wherever it comes from? You're in a position, or at least Food Not Bombs workers are, because they, of course, see people every Saturday and Sunday between 4 and 6 at the post office, and also every Tuesday at City Hall. Is there a lot of hepatitis A among homeless folks?
Well, we hear the news reports, and we worked closely with the health department. In fact, co-sponsored a hepatitis A vaccination clinic at our meal. But I have not yet talked to any people on the street that have had hepatitis A. No one has ever walked up to me and said they have. And we have a lot of... right now, we have a friend that has pneumonia and other issues in the hospital that we're taking care of. You know, he almost died 2 days ago at the post office. And so we've been on top of that. But he doesn't have hepatitis A, as according to the health, according to the Dominican Hospital, it's an issue of one of the most threatening aspects of his health situation is pneumonia.
Now, recently,
I want to get back to this hepatitis A thing. So that this is the deal. What I have heard from Dr. Leff and what you read in the newspapers and up and down the West Coast, that homeless people are contracting hepatitis A. There's been several deaths in San Diego of homeless people. That's the vulnerable community right now, is homeless people. Now, I have heard this from a number of city officials, and this is where I want to pin down the exact information. This is why I wrote Dr. Leff this morning, is that apparently most of the hepatitis A cases are in jails. And most of the cases reported have been in our jail here in Santa Cruz.
I wrote him
and asked him what the number is, and he has not written back yet.
Well, you say most of the cases have been in your jail. How in the hell can you say that if you don't know the numbers? Or if you don't, I mean, where are you getting that information from?
Well, that's just like different city officials, like city councilors have mentioned that to me in passing, that's where the problem is. I've heard that from a couple of nurses that work in the facility near Homeless Services Center. I've heard this from, what many people in the that have been working with us to stop the hepatitis A crisis anecdotally say that it's the jail is a lot of it. So I'm asking and trying to find out the exact number. Now, if it's true, and I've heard this so often from so many people, that a large percentage of the hepatitis A cases come from the jail, which makes sense. You know, it's not clean. You're all in a closed area. You know, and then we have to admit, according to the homeless report by the city council that happened in May, that half of all those arrested have an address of Coral Street or transient or homeless, that a huge percentage of the people in the jail are people living on the streets. So what this means is that, first of all, if it's true that there's a huge amount of hepatitis, highest percentage is coming from the jail, whatever that percentage turns out to be, and I don't know if they even study that or keep real numbers of that, but I asked Dr. Leff that question. But if that turns out to be true, then what this becomes clear is that the organization most responsible for the spread of hepatitis A in Santa Cruz is the city council and the city manager's office. Because what is happening is people are being arrested essentially for so-called quality of life crimes. This whole system of criminalization of homeless people, those homeless people are being taken off the streets and put in the county jail and then released back out on the streets with hepatitis A. So, contrary to, you know,
Keith, you have no stats, though. Have you any stats about people actually being released with hepatitis A? I mean, presumably they would come to Food Not Bombs that you told me earlier in this interview. Nobody's come to Food Not Bombs with hepatitis A that you know of.
No. In fact, it's a possibility that this whole story is just precautionary, that it is not about. And I mean, there is a problem of hepatitis A in the homeless community in Western, you know, in the West Coast. That is definitely true. And health officials here are definitely trying to stop that from spreading. And we are cooperating with that. And so you have that as an issue. So we don't know the numbers, but I'm trying to find out the numbers. I'm kind of nailed
it. I got you. I understand now. Yeah, there is.
There's a series of.
Let me move on to another subject, though.
Against Food Not Bombs, claiming that we're like responsible for the hepatitis A epidemic.
Well, is there?
I'm just pointing out that it could be city council that's actually responsible.
Well, we don't even know if there is a hepatitis A epidemic if we're to believe you, because you have noted that there's.
Yeah, we don't know.
Well, then, you know, why get so speculative? Let me ask you about this.
Well, I only am so speculative.
Yeah, no, I mean, so let's...
Yeah, this is like article stuff.
Let me move beyond the speculation there to another question for you. There's an article called Rethinking Resistance in today's Sentinel about a resist fest that's happening at Abbott Square. You're familiar with the new fencing area, sort of the upscale frou-frou approach that has been created at Abbott Square, about two blocks from where Food Not Bombs feeds at the post office. Will Food Not Bombs be attending this festival and serving food on Cooper Street Saturday? I guess that's a day after tomorrow, 2 to 6.
You know, the odd thing is that they wrote me a bunch of times about it, and I've kind of been writing them back, but I never could figure out exactly what it was they wanted us to do at it, so I don't know. But, you know, I might participate in that. If I can clarify, by the time the event happens, what the hell it is we're supposed to be doing.
Well, they're trying to redesign political engagement, according to the Santa Cruz Center.
Yeah, I don't know what, I mean, so yeah, I need to get back to whatever the person, I think his name is Casey, and find out what exactly, because it's been kind of, yeah, I don't know. But I'm certainly open to participating in some level if I can find out what the hell it is. So that's one thing. And then, so I'm happy to do that.
Any reports of stay-away orders being used? We know this new extensive stay-away law that expands the amount of time you are banned from areas if you just, at the whim of a police officer, if they give you an infraction ticket, particularly if it's the Poganip or Arena Gulch or Moore's Creek, you know, was passed by City Council. It doesn't actually go into effect for another 3 weeks, although there's currently already a stay away. Have you gotten any reports of people who have been actually arrested for not staying away or been given long stay away orders longer than the current 1 day, now 3 days, that, you know, has been passed by City Council as a new make it up as you go kind of let the police do what they want law?
Yeah, no, I don't have any information on that either. No one has really reported on that. The only thing I ever hear about is that I'll move to San Lorenzo Park. People having pneumonia. So, and rather, I mean, and Enrique, that was one of the things that he was and hospitalized for. And I've heard that from a number of people. So that's a disease-related thing. And a lot of people on the street seem to think that. That Andy Mills is going to really save us and help us and everything. So that's,
Well, I have heard of a lessening.
Going around flat-handing everybody. I don't know if he's doing that.
But, I mean, I've heard of a lessening of ticketing of people in the last couple of weeks. Have you heard that or not?
No, I haven't heard that. I've heard and seen video, actually, of people being ticketed at the post office still on a relatively regular basis.
Now, the post office has become a regular, is it a 24-hour sleeping spot or just a nighttime sleeping spot? We're talking actually about the Water Street side of the post office, right?
Yeah, both Water and Front have a lot of people there. I just was there 10 minutes ago now. So, yeah, there was a lot of people there.
And are they staying through the day and the night? Is it kind of become the survival sleeper's place? Or?
Yeah, it definitely. It basically, the... Many of the exact same people that were at City Hall are now at the post office.
How are they doing as far as the safety of their possessions? That was a concern that some of them expressed about a couple months back when we had some meetings there about feeling vulnerable, and that has been a criticism by activists like Brent Adams, who are proponents of the sanctuary camp, or I don't know if Phil Posner has criticized it. He's talked about establishing a depot camp again, where he was looking at San Lorenzo Park as a possible place for people to sleep, a sanctuary zone. I'm more cynical about any such contained areas, but what's the story about safety within the homeless community? Is it, have you heard of any diminution or increase in theft and homeless-on-homeless problems?
Oh, yeah. I mean, no, everybody. Yeah, I mean, I heard a bunch of people complaining the last couple of days that stuff got stolen. And then people don't know who it is, and some people blame somebody else that lives nearby, and, you know, the same corner. You know, yeah, I mean, all that's still happening, it seems like, which is really tragic.
Any solidarity or organizing happening among the survival sleepers who are sleeping at the post office, or is it pretty much a put your stuff down and keep your eyes open so nobody takes it, and then, I don't know, pack it up and leave during the day, or I'll sit there all day with...
It does seem like there's a certain amount of people watching each other's stuff. that seem to be pretty successful relative to, you know, the type of thing that, like this that happens. So
there's not much in the way of bathroom facilities down there. It's not as close as it was at City Hall, for instance, right?
Yeah, no, that's a problem. You have the bookstore or the portable toilet behind the Bank of the West would be the only such places.
I did find out, by the way, finally getting a response from the city after it must be years of requests, but the most recent request gets the contract that shows the visitor's restroom at the Bookshop Santa Cruz, or Bookshop Coonerty as I call it, is a public restroom. That is to say, they are paid to admit people from the public, and they cannot discriminate on the basis of various considerations, whether it's disability or political ideology or whatever. There's a whole listing of, you know, creed, race, you know, color, sexual orientation. And so you might advise people that they have a right to walk into the bookshop, unlike...
Yeah, that is definitely cool. Here's one other thing. We're working on... I'm going to have to go here in a second because I got a meeting coming right up. But, you know, we have friends in Funabom that are doing the earthquake relief in Mexico City, and then we have friends that are doing flood relief all over Florida and Texas and that area. And then we are preparing, just in case, the last chances of the earthquake here are preparing, so that we'll be able to do as we did in 89 and provide access to food and so on in the event of an earthquake here. So we're, you know, just people know that, you know, there was just recently two earthquakes over on the other side of the Pacific. They were very large, as well as ones in Mexico. And so we're just kind of, some of the old timers in the local Funabombs suggested that we, you know, just be prudent and have access to water and
get ready.
Propane and stuff like that so we can respond to the issue. So we're having internal discussions on that.
Sounds good, Keith. And people can reach you if they want to be helpful or get more information by...
Yeah, they can call me at 575-770-3377. Or come down to the post office Saturday and Sunday from 4 to 6. And we always need cooks from noon to 3:30 at India Joe's at 418 French Street.
Thanks a lot, Keith.
And we always make everyone wash their hands. And the India Joe's sink, before they cook vegetables, and
I'll be there to make sure you're not lying, Keith McHenry.
Yeah, we have gloves for people and all these things. So.
Tell me another one.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. So that was Keith McHenry. Real apologies to my listeners for not being able to fit in more. But there's going to be a longer show on Sunday, so come on back at 9:30 on Sunday. In the morning. You about the more upcoming info that I'm trying to squeeze out of City Council, the Police Department, Parks and Rec. Chris Krohn will be meeting with constituents at the Coffee Roasting Company from 9 to 10 on Monday prior to the Tuesday City Council meeting, where I should have more information about that on Sunday as well. There are reports from Fresno, Berkeley Poetry from Julia Vinograd, all kinds of stuff that I'll be talking to you about, maybe even the latest updates on the cannabis crackdown or containment or whatever they're trying to pull. Anyway, coming up next, we're going to go right into a flashback, and then that'll be it for this show. Flashback is from August 5th, 1999. It's an interesting show with Bright Tompkins of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, or formerly the Sentinel, with interjections and additions by Skidmark Bob, the V-Man, and others phoning in. In those days, we actually had a phone line, and we might again. So listen in, and thanks for being with me on this very brief edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides for the now, but let's not forget the then, and remember that it has some relation to what's happening now and gives us an interesting perspective.
Studios and this is the air conditioning lesson installed. and the Fluffers. Okay, this is 96.3 FM. You are going to be having a special show today. In our new studio, we have cool interviews, plus our live guest. Do we introduce you by name? Let's have our guest introduce himself.
Hi, Brayton Tompkins, former
Sentinel hack, has joined the show and repudiated his dark past. More on that. The radio is on, the mic is on, your radio is on, and I hope that Brayton's mic is on, too. Brayton, are you there?
Testing. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, it sounds like your needle is moving. Well, this has been many a moon getting us together here, Brayton. I was, of course, I've been hoping to give you a canned interview just to make sure that you didn't reveal any Sentinel secrets and get, of course, the Hit Squad treatment.
Oh, but that's half the fun.
I was afraid, you know, that Honig's hoodlums might come after you. Tom Honig, of course, the infamous Sentinel editor. Actually, we call it the Scent Anal here at the Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. For those of you who are new to the show, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides is a civil rights on the streets show, which actually covers a lot of topics, or a few, depending on your perspective. We cover the sleeping ban. We cover the drug war. We cover protests involving, well, local protesters who are concerned about national issues, like the war on the people of Yugoslavia, like the new ethnic cleansing campaign in Yugoslavia, which is now taking place against the Serbians. And we have a little interview on that one we're going to be playing later. We are concerned about free radio and how it's doing around the country, although that really is a topic much better covered by Vinny the V-Man, who was good enough to set me up as engineer here for this show. Thank you, Vinny. And particularly interested in local politics because so much said about national politics in other areas and so little about what's happening, really happening here in Santa Cruz, that I like to get into that when I can. So homeless issues are also my beat because I've been concerned about civil rights on the streets for three or four decades, and I'm on the streets myself right now, so why shouldn't I be concerned about them? I was evicted three or four days ago, and here I am. I'm taking over this studio, in case anybody wants to know. I'm sleeping here. I'm eating here. I intend to barricade anybody. Well, actually, I'm kidding. I'm looking for a place, but that's another story. But, Brayton, the reason that I originally approached you, I guess we kind of met on the streets three, four years ago around issues. I was interested in, I guess, the sleeping ban at that time and the downtown ordinances. And I was very skeptical about the Sentinel. You were a, kind of a fledgling writer there. And how much time did you actually spend at the Sentinel before you left?
I would say from the summer of 1995 till the fall of 1997, a couple years.
Uh-huh. And were you, what was your position there? Like, how much copy did you actually get into the Sentinel?
I was kind of a jack of all trades. I did a lot of features writing and got quite a few stories for the Spotlight and for the Breaking Away section in there. I did weekend news reports for the hard news section, a lot of crime stuff, which really educated me about the system.
The system at the Sentinel and all those criminals with their suppression of real news, you mean?
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I also learned a lot about that suppression that happens right there in the newsroom, not just regarding how they report on criminals. But in any event, I also did some clerking duties.
Well, let's go back to that. I think, of course, suppression is the main interest I'm interested in. Of course, you've got a number of topics that you've kind of outlined, which I perhaps we can touch on. But suppression of the news. What were the major news stories that happened during your tenure at the Sentinel that you feel did not get covered and that should have, or that got covered in a bad way?
Probably the most alarming for me, or at least the one that sits heaviest in my memory, would have been actually in reference to the sleeping ban. Back when protesters filled City Hall and shut things down and did a lockdown.
Oh, right. You're talking about 1996. That actually, there was a protest going on in front of City Hall since March of 96 when the winter shelter program closed and leaving only, I don't know, 20-odd, 30-odd spaces for over 1,000 homeless people, and a law in place that made it illegal to sleep outside or cover up with bedding. And then a protest led by Dan Hopkins and Sean Alimi for, what, 6 months?
Quite a while.
Culminating in some strong militant action at City Council where, I guess, six, seven people locked themselves down to the furniture and were arrested and tried, and actually the jury hung on their case, and they never served any time, and they were never convicted, as they shouldn't have been. It was a dramatic but nonviolent protest.
Exactly.
But you say the Sentinel did not cover it. Well, I seem to remember John Woolfolk doing a thorough trashing. Of course, he's in the Mercury News.
Well, of course.
And Karen Clark must have had something to say about
that. Well, there's
that.
Coverage, and then there's coverage. As a matter of fact, Karen Clark, for those of you who don't know, who had the City Hall meetings as her beat, was there and did report. Yeah, sure, she reported. However, she only talked to the police and only talked to the City Council members, and she never made any attempt to approach the protesters, who I think would be a very interesting source for the population to hear about concerning an event, well, where they lock themselves down. I knew this, so I was there, and I'd been tipped off that something was going to happen. And I covered just the protesters, knowing quite well that Karen Clark would certainly get the other side.
Mm-hmm. And you actually wrote a story about that?
Yes. I went back to the newsroom after things settled down, after the smoke cleared, so to speak, and I composed what facts I had gotten into just a brief sort of outline, and was hoping, even though I knew better, that Karen Clark and I would come back and maybe meld the two sides together and have some actual objective. Yeah. Mm. Well, I had illusions in those days. They have since been shattered.
Mm.
And in any event, though, make a long story short, we ended up going toe-to-toe in a screaming match in the middle of the newsroom.
Well, give us a blow-by-blow of this conflict, you versus Clark. A round one, what happened?
Well, round one, her eyes were shooting flames when she saw me at the City Hall meeting in the first place.
You were interfering on her beat.
Right, exactly. And I knew there was going to be a showdown going.
I knew there was going to be trouble.
I could hear the bells tolling. And so when I went back to the newsroom, she came into the newsroom storming and came straight to me. And I don't remember her exact words, but I remember something to the effect of,
"Fuck you, you little punk."
Something, yes. Mm-hmm. That pretty well describes it concisely in so many words.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over to her, and I just tried to tell her, well, look, I wanted to make sure that all sides were covered.
Unlike your usual Rotkin-loving coverage. He was, of course, mayor at the time. We called him Riot Act Rotkin because he attempted to make one act of sleeping at City Hall a crime punishable by up to 6 months in jail. He wanted to close City Hall grounds completely at night in order to crush the protest. That one didn't fly too well past the city council, and it didn't fly past the judges, but he was able to make things much more uncomfortable and difficult for protesters. Signs that attacked him personally earned his special animus. He actually had one hauled away himself, which was criticizing him, showing, of course, that his sensitivity to free speech does have its limits.
Quite so, as does Karen Clark's.
Oh, boy.
Certainly, and those limits are...
Karen Clark's invective seemed to have few limits. She was big on the poo-poo angle of the City Hall sleepers protest in 1996.
She was also big on referring to people who were just hanging out down on what used to be Hippie Corner and is now a nice little capitalist building, I believe, in the works. She was used to refer to them in her own voice as a reporter as hooligans and ragamuffins.
Hooligans and ragamuffins. I think that's really quite colorful language. Clark no doubt got a plaudits from Honig and, who knows, McPherson when he was running the paper.
As well as the supervising editor at the time, they were laughing up a storm and
they had a great time with that.
Derogatory jokes. Yeah, that kind of flavor kind of permeated the
newsroom. This attempt to smear homeless people as poo-poo heads or poo-poo asses or just protesters as just being people who like to piss and shit and create a mess at City Hall just for the hell of it. You know, issues like the right to sleep at night, the right to live without harassment, the right to maintain one's first-class citizenship in a society where homeless people have become kind of a forbidden group in a certain sense. I mean, the authorities won't tell you this, of course, because it's unconstitutional to do that, but in fact, a lot of the ordinances that are now making the rounds at city councils, such as the curfew laws in the parks, the curfew laws along the river levee, are designed to harass the homeless. And to typify or to characterize the homeless as hooligans sort of reminds me of Der Stürmer kind of journalism, so beloved of our old friends, the National Socialist Democratic Workers' Party, NSDAP, or the Nazis, as they called themselves in Germany in the 30s, who really wanted to characterize the Jews in a certain way, and so they did. And this, of course, is how a lot of newspapers, a lot of mainstream papers characterize homeless people, and it certainly, I think, does aptly describe Karen Clark, who, with one exception that I remember, was almost uniformly hostile to and prejudicial against and smeared homeless protests, often giving misinformation as well. The one exception was, I think, three of us went into her office and went through her story, showing her her factual errors. And she then said, well, write an editorial and send it in. And Becky Johnson sent in an editorial. She was then on the board of directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which actually talked about what was really going on at City Hall, and it was printed, pretty much. I think there may have been a change or two. Usually the editor does something to kind of cripple or, cut out the life to show that he or she has control over what's going
on. It starts right in the title that they give the editorial. They think very carefully about that.
Right. I know that when Johnson wrote another editorial the year before, or maybe it was the year after, I'm not sure. Anyway, it was when the Real Change, Not Spare Change hoax was making the rounds. That's the program beloved of Linda Steinau and Don Lane, who now is the staff person, get this, the $7,500 staff person for the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Yeah, I used to sit on the board of directors for the Homeless Community Resource Center with her, and I could not believe.
Linda Steinow.
Linda Steinow.
And Lane was also on that board. Don Lane was also on the Homeless Resources Center. He was sort of the yes man for Karen Gillette when she was running the show out there. And now he's getting a highly paid position to essentially, I guess, lead this group of bewildered activists around. This is the Crone Homeless Issues Task Force, which has now got a full component of people, and they're supposed to do something. And in fact, what they'll be doing is, I suspect, not doing the kind of activism they need to be doing, and all under Don Lane's leadership. I know what Lane apparently, I can't stop babbling about him. But let's get back to the Sentinel. And I asked you what. Well, I guess getting back to the original question, you originally, I asked you what you had done at the Sentinel. What issues had been most censored or distorted or ignored by the Sentinel in your tenure there that you noticed? And maybe give us some notion of the internal workings of how this happened and colorful little anecdotes, maybe some dirty jokes and throw in some stuff.
I don't know too many dirty jokes, but... I do, it really basically, it all starts with a reporter, it either happens one or two ways. A reporter comes to an editor with some information they've gotten, and the editor says it's not newsworthy. And I'll give you a good example of that. A few years back, or not even a few years back, there was a lot of protesting going on with the Big Mountain issue here in Santa Cruz.
And Big Mountain, for those who don't know, is the fight for the Dene people to retain their rights against, kind of a combination of Peabody oil and or coal companies and other Indian Native American groups being used kind of as ringers to dispossess Navajos of their land. And that was a really burning issue for a lot of people. Although it was an important issue, I was always more concerned about local homeless people, and I keep wondering why. And, of course, a lot of the people involved in Big Mountain were also concerned about local homeless people. But you were saying that the Sentinel somehow didn't give these issues the fair coverage that they could have?
No, the editor would flat out, one time there was a protest down at the clock tower in which they were stopping traffic, you know, doing usual things of protest, and it was quite a concern, it caused quite a stir, and the editor's response to the reporter saying, well, you know, this is going on, I believe it was Donna Kimura, was, oh, people don't care about that.
Who was the editor?
The editor was John McNichols. Yes, it was. Often night supervising editor.
Is he still on the Sentinel? Or?
I believe so. I'm sure he'll be there for quite a while. They call him Johnny Mac there.
Johnny Mac.
Yeah.
Boy, these guys, you know, they get into these entrenched positions, and they're sort of like, you know, old turds on the toilet. You cannot dislodge them.
You cannot dislodge them really, because their hands extend out into the community, right into the pocketbooks of major businesses. The Seaside Company, I could list off so many.
Well, let's talk about the Seaside Company. How has the Sentinel treated the Seaside Company? I know that I was sort of impressed during the last election with the kind of fluffy treatment they gave to the beach boardwalk boondoggle, as I called it, or the Canfield Company sellout, the Seaside Company sellout, where the Seaside Company was attempting to expand, get the cities to spend millions of dollars, realign streets, dispossess and evict Hispanic residents, and create a traffic nightmare for all of you middle class folks out there. All to help old Charlie Canfield, you know, build up the boardwalk and supposedly to help the business of the town. What did the Sentinel have to say about that?
Well, the Sentinel didn't really have much to say about the issues of people being dispossessed or anything. I wasn't actually there at the time, but of course, well, it's my local newspaper, unfortunately. But they did certainly report how it would be good for business. They did certainly report how the city council leaders and other established members of the business community thought it would be a great idea to build the economy of Santa Cruz. However, at the same time, the fact is that hundreds and hundreds of people economically disadvantaged, mainly Hispanic people, will have no place to live. And the thing is that the city of Santa Cruz, and that includes the Santa Cruz County Sentinel, because they are much part of the operation as anything else, does not want those undesirables there because it's bad for business. And that's the kind of treachery and the plot that
now
the Sentinel
say
is
this,
involved
but
in.
Now, you see any specific indication of this? I mean, I seem to notice this in terms of their endorsements for the city council last fall, which in, you know, which were the right wingers, Lint Steinau and
Well, you can
Cordero.
Go see it. You can see evidence of
but
this.
But what did you see when you were on the Sentinel? What indications did you see of this?
Well, it's not just indications of what's happening at the Sentinel. I mean, in order to understand and really see it, you have to see it as it's happening all over this country with the media. But you just look at the amount of advertising in a newspaper, and you think about how each one of those ads represents the main source of money. Not each one, but all those ads represent the main source of monetary resources that the Sentinel has.
So who are the big advertisers for the Sentinel?
Seaside Company, a lot of retail stores. I can't really think of specifics because just look at the newspaper and you'll see the big advertisers.
I kind of blank out when I see ads, so I don't really have any realistic sense of who the
either,
advertisers
really.
Are in the Sentinel. So, but I mean, but again, let's get back to the dirt and the grime and the grease the grit and all that stuff. I mean, when you were on the Sentinel, I mean, in a way, the Sentinel has gotten to me. It's sort of the good guy in this most recent attempt by Judge Acow to suppress the press's attempt to expose CPS's bullshit, the Child Protective Service's misinformation that resulted in a child being taken away from his parent. I'm not quite sure I'm getting this exactly right, but and then the judge didn't like this information getting out to the public, so she slaps a contempt order on the Sentinel.
That's really
which,
funny,
which of course is. Interesting, because the Sentinel usually obliges by censoring itself. They don't need to have the judges come in. They do the judge's job for them. This time, apparently, they didn't, and Judge Acow had a cow, so to speak.
Right.
So, but did you see a lot of this censorship while you were there at the Sentinel on other subjects?
Well, I saw quite a bit of censorship. It's really hard to think. I mean, I can remember one night. Where it was the night of the TWA crash during the Olympic Games up in New York City. And as you know, or many of you might know, it came out later the Navy might have been doing missile testing in that area and that might have actually shot down the plane. However, on the night that it was actually shot down, there was a memo that circulated on the AP press to every newspaper in the country, practically. AP press, by the way, is a wire story that sends out stories to all the newspapers in the country, all the major mainstream newspapers in the country. The memo was from Navy Internal Services talking about how they had been doing missile testing in the area and how they thought they might have indirectly or directly, I believe are the exact words, caused this incident. And not only the Sentinel, but every newspaper in the country chose, for some strange reason, not to mention this in the articles that only came out later. That they had actually or might have had some involvement in this. That's the kind of censorship that goes on at the Sentinel. If you want to talk about other kinds of censorship, well, let's talk about the fact that people were stopped up in traffic. There was a major spectacle during that big mountain demonstration, and not one word really got printed on it at all.
Any other instances that you know of?
Any other instances, really hard to... Well, then there's the fact, as I was beginning to explain, about... Karen Clark, and had I not gone there and got the other side
gone to the city council on September 10th, 1996.
Right. I'm sorry. Had I not gone to the city council and been there, the only side that would have been reported was the police and the city council. I don't think I need to tell anybody that would be an extremely slanted view. That's the kind of censorship. It's more about the filtering of information. It's not any specific issues. It's a constant thing that I myself, having not taking part of those kinds of things, wasn't even, aware of. I only saw it the next day when I began to talk to people of the movement who were telling me, well, they're reporting incorrectly. They're not saying anything about why we're doing this or the information, any information that might lead to the public deciding that maybe there is something to the movement, because, of course, they don't want that to happen.
Well, I know that locally issues of police abuse get very little coverage in the Sentinel. And
of course.
And I've had long conversations with Sentinel writer Daryl Cole on this issue. Cole covers the Citizens Police Review Board hearings and... he also is covering the sleeping ban, I guess it was called the Task Force to Examine the Camping Ordinance, the buyer's sellout group that she led to essentially raise expectations and fears, resulting in numerous assaults, some of them very serious, on homeless people, over 20 assaults on homeless people all pretty much unsolved. I guess one person is in custody and is going to be tried for one of those assaults. And yet, in spite of the of these groups, these commissions, Darryl Cole actually tried to do, he made a few minor kind of incremental advances on past reporting. He used the word sleeping ban rather than camping ban frequently.
He is as sold out as anybody else.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's not that I really, actually he wasn't there when I was there, but I've seen those kinds of tactics before. It's called Please the Public. You can see it in the editorials. Honig and Dave Regan, these are, I don't think Dave Regan's actually there anymore, who's the publisher. And other members of higher up members of the Sentinel used to get together and talk about the editorials they would do and talk about how they would, and I've listened, I've heard these conversations, how they would tailor their editorial so that it presented one side and at the same time pleased the public so that nobody would get too angry. This happens in news stories too.
And you actually heard them talking about this?
Yes.
Remember any particular editorials where this was discussed or?
Well, there was a lot of discussion around the eviction of Free Radio Santa Cruz, actually, from Campbell Street.
Back in 1996?
Yeah.
Or was it 95?
I think it was actually 96.
Okay.
Pretty sure it was 96. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of discussion around
that. I remember the Sentinel reporter, Karen Clark, went into great delight in talking about these hooligan outlaws throwing bottles of urine and bags of shit. And
Honig's response in his editorial was, "Where is our outrage?" referring to it as a deluge of urine.
When in fact, of course, that didn't happen at all. What happened was that there were people kind of encamped on the rooftop. They had bottles of urine, which the police dropped from the second story onto the ground. And it was, I guess, Sergeant Crane, when he broke in, he got in, there was some...
A rookie cop.
Well, he was actually a veteran cop.
No, the one who actually dropped, I forget his name.
Oh, right. No, actually, that was...
Was he the one who actually dropped it off?
Well, it wasn't... Crane was the guy who came up the stairway of Campbell in order to...
Yeah.
We're actually also talking about an occasion where the city, instead of meeting the reasonable concerns of those who were entrenched in this household and making a stand by paying them relocation fees, as they were later obliged to do by the court, or at least the owners were. Mm-hmm. By the way, caller, keep hanging on there. We're going to get to you in just a moment if you're calling in. Instead, they insisted on calling a huge police expedition in. Let's catch this phone line, if I can find the phone. There it is. And see what the phone person has to say, our incoming caller.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
It was Officer Lefebvre that threw the bottle of urine off
Campbell Street. Officer Lefebvre? You mean the same officer who is currently the point of controversy in the May 22nd incident?
Yes.
The same officer who is accused of a bizarre pain compliance hold on a woman holding a child in the middle of the, or on the edge of the street.
Yes.
In an attempt to, well, some regard it as a form of torture. And the same officer who got, I should say, punched in the nose by Steve Argue and for that particular action. And
same officer that used pain compliance on me that day, too, as well.
Oh, he used pain compliance on you?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Oh, well, when I came down off the ladder and fell under the awaiting arms of Sergeant Crane.
You're talking about the incident that happened not on May 22nd of this year.
Campbell Street.
Campbell Street 3 years before.
Actually, the anniversary is coming up on the 19th here, August 19th, 1996.
That was when you and a number of other people were evicted from Campbell Street in a completely unnecessary show of police force?
Yes, of course. Well, I don't know what the city cops are doing evicting people anyway. It's usually the sheriff's
department.
But
wait, that's not the way Karen Clark told it.
Of course!
Well, I think we really want to give Karen Clark an opportunity. Karen, if you're out there, please call at 427-3772, our Free Radio studio line, as soon as we get this
you, Karen.
Off the line.
Well, the other point I wanted to bring up about Karen is about that, let's see, when was it, like 97 or so, Leonard Weinglass was speaking up on UCSC campus, and in an effort to create her own story, decided to call the wife of the slain officer, Daniel Faulkner.
Now let's get some background. We're talking about a man who is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Mumia Abu-Jamal, yes.
Mumia Abu-Jamal is a man, a black man, who is held in jail in Philadelphia, has been for almost 20 years, for allegedly shooting a police officer in a case that has aroused worldwide controversy, and Amnesty International considers him a prisoner of conscience.
Right. She, our ever-loving Karen Clark of the Santa Cruz Sentinel called up Daniel Faulkner's, ex-Daniel Faulkner's wife, Maureen Faulkner, and had her flown down. Now, probably the Sentinel paid for it. I wouldn't imagine why not. And actually brought her to this forum on Mumia Abu-Jamal and his case up on campus. This was 96 or 90, I think it was 97. And actually she created her own story. She was able to get this woman here and start a little controversy in that in the group, in the forum, which was mainly focused on the injustice of Mumia Abu-Jamal, and then she had to throw this little thing in there and create her own little story, which I thought was, you know, reporters aren't supposed to do that, right?
But they do it all the time. In fact,
to be
your
objective.
Beat, you're told when you have a beat that you have to go find the stories, and when, and I quote so many editors there, when you cannot find the stories, make them.
Make them happen.
Well, that's what, you know, Hearst used to say. Hearst, William Randolph Hearst of the San Francisco Examiner. His correspondent from Spain in 1898 wired into the press room. There's no war here, you know. What can I do? And he said,
right.
Said you supply the story, I'll supply the war.
Right, exactly. Well, I just thought I'd bring up that little thing that the Sentinel has done. Not to mention printing people's names that don't want their names printed because their name happened to be in some story. I had to be unrelated to the story that they're putting.
Well, I think we also, one of the main things about the Sentinel is more what it doesn't print. And I know you've
right.
done a lot of research, Caller. I recognize your voice. You are, of course, Skidmark Bob, a radio broadcaster, cop watcher, proud father, and troublemaker extraordinaire.
And ragamuffin extraordinaire.
Certainly
hooligan, too.
Hooligan.
Indeed, a Food Not Bomber at a time when they were arresting Food Not Bombers or threatening to do so. And,
yes.
You know, just certainly, I guess you were part of the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty at one time.
Yes, I was.
That's the group that protested the sitting ordinance, which has now become such a accepted part of our heritage. I saw today as I walked down the mall some guy, Officer Malate, one of our local CSO.
454.
Police officers came up to him and said, "You can't sit near the Del Mar Theater." And so he got up and he moved. And I guess we can consider this in advance. He sat on one of those low planters where it's also illegal to sit. But apparently Officer Malate, not wishing to ask him to move again, let it slide.
Let it slide.
So we must see, there's a great liberal trend. You can, as long as you don't sit near the sacred shops or of the shrines of our modern-day Santa Cruz, it's okie dokie if you sit near the planters, or at least on this particular occasion it was.
Well, I have to go, but I wanted to let people know that that's one of the reasons why we started this radio station, Free Radio Santa Cruz, because time and time again, you know, demonstration or even in informational types things, we try to refer to the Sentinel, and they'd come out. We were distorted time and time and time again, thinking, you know what? I could say that fucking story better. I could do this thing better. I could do it much better. You know, and so we did.
Well,
so we put the station on the air and
well,
working on it
now,
right
hold,
now.
Hold it, Bob. There's always the alternate media. The Metro usually gets it right, right?
Yeah,
or perhaps far
right.
Right. Maybe that's a better way
far
to put it.
Far right.
There is no mainstream newspaper in this country that will ever not distort the movement of people who are working towards the liberation.
And in a way, the Sentinel is not really mainstream at all. It's a Republican newspaper.
No. Wait a minute.
I had one more question I got to go. Who is the Sentinel owned by? Bye.
The Sentinel is actually directly owned by Ottawa News Services, which owns various local newspapers, but Ottawa News Services is owned by Dow Chemicals. So what is a chemical company giving us our news? That's what I wonder.
I thought that the Wall Street Journal either owned or was one of the kind of the family of papers that the Sentinel was now owned by. We have an incoming call. Perhaps that caller will have something to enlighten us in that subject.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
No enlightenment here. I just want to know what that your guest was going to say about those private meetings with the Sentinel bigwigs about Free Radio Santa Cruz. That was what started off. And
private meetings?
Yeah, you kind of lost track a little bit there, didn't you?
Private meetings.
You know, the secret meetings or the editorial meetings and what they were talking about Free Radio
Santa
Cruz. Well,
we can't really say they were secret meetings. They were held in the newsroom, and that just goes to show you how the newsroom is slanted. It was several different conversations concerning what had happened there and how they wanted to present it, because they knew that free radio had become somewhat of a popular subject, a fad, a trend, even in some of the mainstream people. So they didn't want to offend them and offend the advertisers that they represented. So they were working out how to denounce free radio. And, I mean, literally, I mean, we can't let them go on and things like that. Just totally slanted and totally putting that into the public's mind. But at the same time, you know, they were working on how they could throw in other things to kind of throw the public off.
Any other questions, caller?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I think the Sentinel just needs a truth squad all of its own. I mean, if free radio really should have a daily program correcting and augmenting.
You want to have free press.
What is not mentioned in the Sentinel, or what is inappropriately characterized. I mean, even such things as the times of city council meetings is frequently misstated in the Sentinel. It's just amazing. I mean, I'm a pretty regular city council person in terms of going to these silly meetings, and I know when I read it in the Sentinel that that's no indication whatsoever that's actually the truth. And often there are meetings that are not mentioned in the Sentinel that are public meetings, like city council meetings, that just don't get there. It's just it's a tired joke, and it's a monopoly joke in our town.
More than tired, it's horrible.
And they're
programming the people out there, so the people who are aware and are awake in this community that are trying to say, hey, look, why do we have people living on the streets? Let's do something about it. And all the different issues. Hey, why do we have Mumi Abu-Jamal in prison when it's obvious that he is not guilty? All these things that people are trying to bring to the public, the mainstream, and that refers to corporations and businesses right here in Santa Cruz, people like the Seaside Company, do not want that information coming out, because, of course, people who are liberated and aware will not want to buy the Sentinel.
The phones are ringing off the hook. Let's
or
see
go to the boardwalk. Now. They'll have better things to do with their lives.
Yeah.
You're with us on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Can I have one question?
Mm-hmm.
What can a person do? Like, I live with my disabled going blind, literally, because she's a diabetic mother, and the Sentinel fucking truck delivers this newspaper every morning and wakes her up, and it really bothers her. What can be done about that? And we've talked to them. They don't give a shit.
That's an interesting point. I think a little protest in front of the Sentinel might be one approach. We'd actually, some of us who have been concerned with the Sentinel's failure to cover the issue of the Santa Cruz Five and the police attack on peaceful protesters at the May 22nd demonstration and subsequent police harassment of activists in that movement. And some of us came up with the idea of sort of setting up a table in front of the Sentinel and encouraging people to drop their subscription to the Sentinel and instead donate their money instead to the cause of the Santa Cruz Five or, I don't know, Free Radio Santa Cruz, some alternate journal. Now, just put together a second newspaper. Obviously, the town needs another newspaper. They had one, The Independent. It's a weekly. They have this piece of trash, The Metro, which is kind of a corporate joke from over the hill. In answer to your question, what do you do? I guess you could go to the radio stations. I mean, the radio stations are sometimes relatively sympathetic because they're alternate media, like KSCO, not particularly notable radio station, but, you know, one which does have talk shows. And you could also, of course, call the Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can call KZSC.
Yeah.
You know, you could sit downtown in a wheelchair with a sign, the Sentinel discriminates against the disabled. That would get them nervous.
Yeah.
You know, because it is a form of discrimination. If the Sentinel is ignoring your complaints, your mother is a disabled person, you've made that all, you know, very clear. You could also file a complaint with the district attorney's office that the Sentinel is violating some noise code. You want to document.
Well, there are no businesses that are allowed in this mobile home park, and that's a business.
Well, the other thing is you could take some C4 or plastic explosive. Just kidding. No, I don't want to suggest that. I sometimes get whimsical. I'm a nonviolent kind of person myself, but I do believe in violent humor every so often.
Yeah.
Helps to get rid of some of the tension. I think there are numerous ways of embarrassing the Sentinel, ranging from, you know, a protest in front of their doors to a wheelchair downtown to going to the other media. What do you think, Brayden? We're talking, by the way, on the air with us, we have Brayden Tompkins And do you want to take this on the air? Or do you want to, because we can open up the phone lines, caller, or do you want to
No, I was going to say, yeah, I don't have anything against the Metro. They've been helping the Free Radio out a little bit, you know, as much as they can. I appreciate that big time. But the Sentinel, kiss my ass.
Okay, well, thank you, caller.
I'm sorry, what was your question?
No, I don't know. I think what we're going to do is take a brief musical break here in order to allow you to have a breather. Maybe you can go read the Sentinel and check out the latest information. I know that I can't wait every morning to read what's happening in town, opening up the Sentinel. It's quite an experience. We're at 427-3772 for those of you who want to call in. Free Radio Santa Cruz, that's what you're listening to, 96.3 FM. With us in the studio is that former Sentinel writer, and I guess you're a Free Radio broadcaster as well, right?
The studio.
When is your show? You have a show? Or?
I'm working on it. Definitely.
Watch out, Sentinel. This could be liberated Sentinel territory soon. If we don't,
I'm not going to waste my time with the Sentinel. There's much bigger issues to talk about than that rag.
So give us a call if you want to join this ongoing discussion about the Sentinel and or about anything else that you think might be relevant around the topic. Again, civil rights on the streets is my interest. So stay with us.
I haven't training manual. Once I even read it. When it comes to People's Park and food not bombs, forget it. I'm a UC cop. 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 Oh, and the law means nothing to me. I volunteer for demonstrations every time they happen. Cause UC makes it clear to me it's time for batting practice. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. Cause I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop. And the law means nothing to me. Well, murderers and rapists on the street are fine with me. It's these hippies from the 60s that we can't allow run free. I'm a UC cop. 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 And the law means nothing to me. Well, these women on the front lines, they get me all excited. The party's in the holding cell and I'm always invited. I'm a UC cop. I'm a UC cop.
Carol Denny, I'm a UC cop, from her album Failure to Disperse, which also contains the fine song Set Your Radio Free, as well as many other fine songs, some of which you'll be hearing on Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm your host, Robert Norris. Phone line to call in is 427-3772, and I'm kind of a little behind queuing up the tapes, but I guess what I'm going to do is play a little more of the, well, here's an incoming call. I hope that we have a new caller here. We'll see.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, I have a music request.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
The band?
The band, as in B-A-N-N-E-D.
Yes, as in, like, the Citizens Band radio station of Santa Cruz, Free Radio.
Indeed. Well, the first, we have a number of songs here. The band actually is a band that I came across on the streets of Santa Cruz 2 days ago. So did you, I guess.
It's funny you should mention that because I met them on the internet and I invited them. I noticed that they were doing a tour of the West Coast about a month ago, this was. And I noticed they were stopping off in Berkeley and San Francisco. And there was a 3-day gap where they were headed, I think, to Bakersfield, I'm not sure. And so I emailed them and said, hey, why don't you stop in Santa Cruz? Because they were interested in doing benefits for micro radio stations or Mumia Abu-Jamal groups, just interested in doing political benefits. Mm-hmm. And so I contacted them, and in the midst of the craziness of our move and stuff, forgot that they were coming. And they did get back to me, and I just completely forgot. And I kind of feel really bad because I was supposed to help them play somewhere, and that never happened.
So they mentioned you, and I think they said that they have some gig in San Francisco tonight. Otherwise, they would have come on the air on my show.
Oh, bummer.
But they may be coming back. I mean, they have a very interesting history. Actually, gave me some of their literature. They got a $20,000 settlement in Woodstock, New York, about 3 or 4 months ago, when the police arrested them for naughty lyrics, and they sued them. They sued the police, or they sued
wow.
the city authority, and they effectively, you know, forced to settle. And I'm going to hope I can read about that and find that later. I'm
$20,000.
$20,000.
That's really cool.
Similar to what a man got up in Berkeley for being arrested for chalking on the sidewalk.
What?
Oh yeah, he was arrested for chalking on the sidewalk during the People's Park demonstrations of the early '90s, where activists trying to make sure the park remained in the hands of the community instead of going into the corporate hands of the university. And, you know, it's legal to write on the sidewalk with chalk, erasable
right.
chalk. It's not vandalism. It's
right.
And the police were arresting people for doing it because, of course, the police...
kind of do what they want.
As Sergeant, I guess it was as Officer, was it Officer Garner? I think somebody told me today, I heard this, I believe, from Steve Argue. Officer Garner was making an arrest...
morning.
Yes.
Yeah, at about 8:30.
Really?
Or 6 o'clock this morning, yeah.
And what you want to tell us about that, Vinny?
I heard it secondhand from Steve, too, but basically that he arrested or gave a ticket to a homeless man, and a paraplegic at that, and for sleeping.
At oh, right.
6 o'clock this morning, and the paraplegic man said to him, why are you doing this, or something along that lines, and he says, oh, I enjoy doing this. I've been doing it all night since 11:30.
That's
referring to the time when it does become illegal to sleep.
That actually was the story I was told by the paraplegic's friend, the homeless person's friend. But I was actually referring to another incident. I don't know, maybe I'm not thinking of Officer Garner, but I'm thinking of the famous statement by Sergeant Clark, which was repeated by another officer. And I think it was Garner in a... or maybe it was Lefevre. It was some officer whose name I recognized because he'd been involved in recent controversies. He was telling a guy he either wanted to search... Oh, he wanted to do a warrant check and arrest him on a warrant.
What?
And he held him in cuffs or something, and he said, why do you have to arrest me on this warrant? What's the point? You know, I mean, you can let me go. And he said, because I can.
Because I can.
That's what Sergeant Clark, of course, his famous response when asked why he was stealing blankets from the homeless in the spring of 1996 at City Hall.
Right.
When photographs of blankets were all that were needed to show that the people were violating the blanket ban law, his response was, because I can. So that's, again, you know, I guess that's the response of the police officers who shot down...
John Dine.
I don't know if Officer Carey said that, but I think, I mean, I
that's just the mentality of the department, I think.
It seems that there is, you know, if there is no check to police abuse, if the only check to police abuse is a kind of a fig leaf group called the Citizens Police Review Board, which has closed-door reviews of investigations conducted by the police department themselves, then you have a situation where the police are empowered to continue this kind of misbehavior.
Yeah.
And it really, you know,
you're almost encouraged to.
You know, if the higher ups who are responsible for controlling their police department, for weeding out the bad apples, for correcting bad policies, like Chief Belcher is supposed to do. I'm going to get a few words. If those the higher ups aren't doing their jobs, and in fact they get supported and even changing the rules so they don't have to do their jobs, which is what happened like a couple of years ago with Directive C-7 when Police Chief Belcher decided he didn't have to forward complaints to the Citizens Police Review Board.
Right.
He could decide which ones he would forward and which ones he wouldn't. He called the ones he wouldn't inquiries rather than full complaints. And that whole issue, by the way, is coming up at the Citizens Police Review Board on Monday for those of you who want to go down to the board and follow it. The police department has refused, I repeat, refused to release original copies of inquiries to our Citizen Police Review Board just to look at them, to see
what people are inquiring about.
What's actually going on. They're not saying send us every inquiry. They're saying, Police Chief, you've sent us a summary of all the inquiries. That's nice. But in order for us to judge if the summary adequately reflects what the real inquiries say, we have to see the real inquiries to get some indication. Chief Belcher has said he cannot, he is forbidden by law from doing so. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I'm wondering whose law he's talking about. I can't believe that's true.
Particularly, his law.
He created this directive. He was obliged by law to forward all those things to the police department under his own directive, under the CPRB law, and under state law. And then he unilaterally changed the law himself. His own police department policy, not the law. He can't change the law. And now he claims that he cannot do that. I mean, it's part of this endless, grueling, low-intensity warfare against any attempt, however ineffectual, to maintain any kind of oversight of the police department.
Yeah.
But I seem to be straying from the Sentinel, which has been at least part of the topic, and your own request that we play the band. I'm going to try to get the band queued up because there's some kinds of music I like and others I don't, and I'm very picky about music on my show.
Oh, I see.
But I will certainly give
it. What kind of music do they play?
Well, they sang some great songs on the street, but I have to kind of cue up to that tape. And as usual, I'm behind times because being a homeless waif myself, I'm a bit confused, bedazzled, and bedraggled. So I'll do what I can.
Why don't you get a job, you bum?
Well, that's a good point.
Just kidding.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I'm going to untie your phone line right now.
Thank you.
And I hope that you get to my request.
Thank you.
And I hate the Sentinel, too.
All right.
Well, there seems to be a certain consensus on the quality of the Sentinel, or the Sent Anal, as I sometimes call it. We in the studio with us is former Sentinel wage slave Brayton Tompkins, and Brayton's back. You actually, Brayton, wanted to get into a broader kind of perspective on how the media, mainstream media, distorts, filters, censors, and destroys the news, and actually turns it into propaganda. Frankly, I'd be happy to have you present that, but it's not. This kind of gets into the more theoretical, abstract area, which detracts from my ever pressing interest in specific, concrete day-to-day details. But please, it sounds like you've given this matter some thought. So why don't you talk about it?
Well, first of all, it's actually not me really who's given this thought. It's actually Noam Chomsky. Who,
One of them pinkos, man.
But he does have a great analysis of exactly why we see the Sentinel doing the kinds of things it does, what sort of purpose it serves for the whole machine as a whole. But there's several different ways he lists that the media today makes sure that the public knows and thinks what it wants it to know and think. And the first way, we already touched upon earlier, was selection of topics. A reporter comes up and says, hey, there's a big protest going down at the clock tower. You know, it's Big Mountain. It's an issue that's, been in the press. We need to go cover that. The editor says, no, people don't care about it. And the truth is the editor's not saying that because he thinks people don't care about it. The fact that millions of people have been involved in this movement kind of shows that, the people do care about it. It's the fact that the editor does not want that topic to enter into mainstream thought, into what people think. Because you think about it, you read a newspaper, you're sitting on the toilet, you're in your day-to-day life, you're on your alpha waves, you're cruising through your day, and into your day comes the news. And you are taught to accept that what is on print or what is on TV is the truth, and people assume it. So I'm sure a lot of listeners know that already. So right off the bat, they start programming the masses just by saying what's going to be reported on in the first place and what's not.
I would like to find some way of opening up these lines, any of you folks out there listening who are not our regular callers or listeners, but find what we're saying provocative or interesting or something you want to contribute to, the phone number here is 427-3772. What do you think of the Sentinel? I mean, are we giving a relatively okay paper a bad rap here? Is this some sort of private grudge match against a paper that does a fairly good job, considering it's a small town and so forth? What's the viewpoint you have out there, Radio Land? I mean, we know what these old ideologues like old Brayton here think, and these constant cranks who call in with complaints about their personal issue, the Santa Cruz Five and Campbell Street and all these things. But what about the day-to-day news? I mean, how does the Sentinel do in covering the day-to-day news? Give us a call at 427-3772. I mean, do you subscribe to the Sentinel? Have you canceled your subscription lately? Have you ever had an urge to bomb the Sentinel? No, just kidding. to pie the editor of the Sentinel. I've got to watch myself. I've got to control that mouth. I think the Sentinel is a bomb, I've got to tell you. You know, when I look at the Sentinel, I see all these hackneyed, reprinted stories from other wire services that have nothing to do with Santa Cruz. In fact, when I compare the Sentinel, a current issue of the Sentinel, with one 5 years ago or 20 years ago, the Sentinel has been deteriorating steadily. I mean, it used to have three or four times the amount of local, it's hard to say coverage, but at least there were stories about local things. And it seemed to be in much greater abundance. Have you noticed anything like that, Brayton? What do you think?
Yeah, actually, looking through the morgues, just doing research for the various stories I was doing, I did notice a trend. The Sentinel used to be very locally oriented, Santa Cruz County Sentinel, and there was a meaning behind that. But, of course, as movements began to sprout up, as Santa Cruz became somewhat of an oasis for alternative thinking, well, the Sentinel as a mainstream newspaper no longer had the ability to report about those things. Of course, they're turning to newswire services, and they are. If you look at the front page of the Sentinel, most of your stories there are not about Santa Cruz, and there's a lot going on in here, Santa Cruz.
You know, I think it's not just that. I think it has to do with the management. I think the Wall Street Journal
certainly
did take over the Sentinel some years ago. The company that controls the Wall Street Journal.
No, it got bought out. Really, it is Dow.
I believe that too, but I think that there's probably some complex structure.
That
also controls Dow. That controls
one
the Wall Street
giant
Journal.
Happy little corporation.
And so instead of it being McPherson's newspaper or whatever, Where there was some professional pride, however,
there is, it still is McPherson's newspaper. He comes into the Sentinel newsroom at least once a week. Mm-hmm. He's constantly in there, and he's just as much a part of what happens at the Sentinel as anyone else.
We have someone at the door. We have someone on the phones. Hang on here.
It's Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're on the air.
Dow Jones is the parent company of the Wall Street Journal, which owns Ottaway newspapers.
And so, in other words, there is a fundamental link there.
It's not Dow Chemical, it's Dow Jones.
Well, I'm glad we have somebody with his head screwed on right here.
Oh, sorry, you're right, it was.
If we didn't have a responsible individual listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, we'd be dismissed countywide as complete idiots. I'd like to thank you, caller, for clarifying that. Do you have any comments on the Sentinel while we have you on the line?
The Sentinel is a community newspaper that has to a substantial degree, be driven by advertising revenue. And in regards to whether their local coverage is adequate or not, in some cases it is, and in some cases it isn't. They make judgment calls, right? I think the one thing that I would add to what's been said is to what degree does one expect the newspaper of record to incite? Okay, they have a right to their editorial perspective, and one would only assume that it would be leaning towards commercial growth.
Well, what about the way these?
And I don't happen to disagree with that necessarily.
Caller, let me ask you this: We know that the district attorney's office, the former district attorney and now Judge Art Danner, has come through a number of rather scandalous episodes without a lot of, good coverage on the issue in the Sentinel. Or would you say the Sentinel did cover the issue?
I think they did. I would
really
also throw in there the Mid-County Post, okay?
Mid-County Post has done a good job
on that issue, particularly back in the Gardner days of the falsified time cards. The issue becomes, how far within sighting. And if you talk about a hot potato issue in Santa Cruz, it's Arthur Danner III and the repercussions therein with the track record that's very difficult to evade given the documentation.
But the Sentinel has been evading it quite well, don't you think?
I don't want to say that. I won't say that. What I will say is that I think they find themselves in a predicament as to what they want to be labeled as inciting. I think that one can say that there has not been enough within the community itself due process that rises to the level where the Sentinel has no choice but to take it on as an issue.
Oh, I would disagree with that strongly.
All right.
I think that there has been a tremendous amount of activity going on in Santa Cruz, and I think that the Sentinel, you're right, to serve its advertisers, has refused to print a lot of this information.
That cannot be held against
And that's the problem right
them.
There. I mean, was the First Amendment intended or created to support business communities, or was it intended to allow the media to be able to report as objective truth as possible to the public so that they could make better decisions in their own lives?
Well, now here
I think
it
if
is.
You look at a lot of the people who were part of the First Amendment, a lot of the radical people who were later thrown out of the Continental Congress, their vision, their idea of the First Amendment had nothing to do with business.
Well, here it is. If you want to go out and publish a paper, start it up, go out and do it, and fund it. And that is practical freedom of speech.
Well, you know, that's what A.J. Liebling, who's a very famous writer, used to say, that America certainly does have freedom of the press for anyone who owns one.
There is ultimately very little that one can say about that, I don't think, contrary in honest terms. And I think that free radio fits in with that. I certainly agree that free radio and small wattage radio stations ought to be allowed to exist and endure. But it costs money and it costs effort
to keep these kinds of things going. Don't you see a problem with that fact?
It's not a problem. The problem is when you want to take some blanket abstract ideology and put it into practice, because all you're going to end up with is ruthless authoritarianism. And I say we're better off with at least the option. If you want to go out and put up flyers, if you want to start your own weekly, you want to get on free radio, et cetera, you got the opportunity. One has to lay a lot of the dilemma on the individuals themselves that don't want to know, etc. Okay, so until we become more politicized, we ought to be grateful that it isn't worse, and in many cases I think it's fine.
Well, let's consider, frankly, I recognize the voice of this caller. This is the infamous Bob LaMonica, and Bob, you've been involved in trying to alert the community to the need for a rent stabilization board, right?
Rent control, going out the gate, had a lot of good support, including from the Sentinel, as far as I'm concerned,
really?
For a very, very hot potato issue.
Let me put another one in here.
Fine job with their coverage, two shows in a row. All right, but we have also tried. I think one of the things is that
so twice
never underestimate results for other than contempt for the mainstream. Like with the Hemp Expo, we've come on 2 years in a row, pretty diplomatic and polite, with a very well constructed show.
Mm-hmm. Well,
all right, that has been picked up for that very reason by the media.
Right. Well, I applaud and the Sentinel and any other organ that covers that. But my concern is, for example, I was at court today, and I ran into a man. I don't know if you know Dan Cooper. Hopefully, I'll be playing an interview with him later.
Yeah, I know Dan Cooper.
Dan is a man who, you know, like yourself, he circulates petitions on various initiatives.
In fact, Dan and I are from the same. We were both born in the same place.
Well, really,
same town.
Well, Dan was hauled into court for possession of less than an ounce of marijuana,
mm-hmm.
because someone had left a pipe in his vehicle. It wasn't his pipe, you know. And the police officer did an illegal search of the car, found the pipe. All he had was a public defender. He was charged with a misdemeanor. He had to go back to court four times, and the public defender kept urging him to take drug diversion, which meant that he would have lost his license for 6 months, when in fact his livelihood depends on his having a driver's license. This is the public defender's. This is the district attorney's office, Maraganda. And the reason I mention it, and what relation you might ask, does it have to the Sentinel's coverage of the drug war, which I think is one of the key issues of of our time, and very important locally because it fills up the jails and mm-hmm. produces a complete truncation of the Constitution locally. And it essentially is a form of terror.
Well, here it is, and I'll come back to it.
I don't see them doing anything on that
issue. Here it is. I agree with you in regards to the drug war, Robert. Mm-hmm. A lot needs to be said about the way issues are presented. And whether they're presented credibly or not.
By the way, Dan did get the charge dropped, by the way.
Okay.
But he had to do it. He had to do it in the face of the district attorney,
I'll give you a recent issue that the Sentinel put at the top of the front page. That's a very, very hot, volatile issue. That is the sheriff's deputies blowing firecrackers and drinking in the well of the county building.
That's good. But I mean, how often does that happen?
Well. You know, hey, give credit where credit's due. Okay.
I'm told it was broken by KOIN, not by the Sentinel, and I know the reporter broke it.
Good point. I mean, I'll go with that. Okay, but nonetheless, the Sentinel got on it, and I thought their coverage of it was good for as hot of a potato it is, and I hope they follow up on it. Now I agree, or I think it's been said over the course we've been talking, abuse of power is a significant issue. In my opinion, the most significant issue that we have to deal with. But it is also the most difficult issue because it means naming names. It means drawing definitive lines.
Sure.
It means scandal, okay, what it means. And we don't yet have the model, as far as I'm concerned, to produce the climate that can deal with these things. Santa Cruz, when you take away the college and when you take away the tourists, it's a little town. 50,000 people, 51.5, whatever it is.
50.
Little town, okay? So I think we're all learning how to develop models that are credible to present issues that are necessary.
A lot of people dying while some of us are learning.
Let me
a lot
put
of
that
people
into the
being
mix.
Convicted at the same time.
And also, I think Karen Clark is no longer on the Sentinel staff.
She moved to Watsonville, I believe.
Yeah, she's
not
Watsonville
on the. I don't see her name in the paper at all anymore.
I think you're right. What is happening?
Well, there's two separate issues of the Sentinel. One that appears in the Paro Valley. That's actually a separate issue that often covers, I guess, more local coverage in Watsonville, and a lot of the stories don't end up appearing in the Santa Cruz
edition. Interesting. I've never seen that. Watsonville issue.
It's no better.
Anyhow, those are my comments.
Hey, thank you. Before you go,
I
want to ask you one more time, how is that rent control initiative doing, or that rent stabilization
initiative? It's very popular, even with the criticisms that are, as this thing kind of unfolds, and like with any issue, it's educational. Rent control, and people kind of jump the gun as to what it is. It doesn't deny property owners a right to a profit, for example. It's regulation of essentially unregulated market. In a situation, you know, i.e. Santa Cruz, 1999, that is drastic and requires something.
You're telling me.
This is, as far as I'm concerned, and many, many others, quite modest given the situation.
You have 3 months to get, what, another couple thousand signatures?
Yeah, and it would be... I won't say that it's not possible that it won't make it, but every indication is that we're going to make it to ballot. We haven't even really touched UC Santa Cruz with the exception of Slug Books, which picked up the petition about a month ago. Very popular issue, once again for such a hot potato, and I find it very fascinating to deal with it, and it's growing very well.
Well, for those who want to...
I think it indicates, Robert, that things can be done mm-hmm. with very provocative issues. A lot of it has to do with the way they're presented.
Well, I've got to tell you, I was saying this today, Bob, that I really think I would have preferred to see the issue brought directly to City Council in specific form. After all, we have Mike Rotkin, the famous sofa bed socialist, who claims...
Let me finish.
He claims, you know, to be essentially a supporter of rent control, and you have three new City Council members who are elected by, you know, the so-called progressive side of town. What's happened with this initiative is it has prompted all the landlords to up their profits by 50%, and I speak from experience because I've been running around looking at houses.
I've been hearing this too.
And if it gets passed, it's an advisory measure. So,
well,
I mean,
it is. Let me give you the justification for why it wasn't spelled out verbatim. It would have been torn apart bit by bit. And this way, the concept flies, it is political dynamite. Okay, if this passes at the ballot in March 2000, it's going
to
happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, I think
and the first step of implementing
September
rent
1999
control,
is what we
the
need.
First step is, of course, a rent moratorium. And if landlords are going to get their last
gouge
in, that'll never happen. A rent moratorium will happen.
if landlords want to get their last gouge in, well, let's realize that for what that is, and that's really not very humane and polite and taking advantage of a situation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call it what it is, which is exploitation.
Profiteering.
All right.
Yep.
So advisory proposition, it lays out the concept. Rent control is going to follow the model that they all follow. There's been a lot of changes in the law over the last 20 years, but they all follow essentially the same pattern. Santa Cruz would benefit tremendously by this. It was the correct approach, Robert, because the other approach, to have spelled it out, it would have been torn apart by little bits.
I don't think the approaches are mutually exclusive. I think that, you know, a group of people could go to the council right now and say, in September, we want you to put, you know, a measure before the council and get some immediate rent control action.
They can, indirectly I would support that, but I think this is the correct approach to bring it to that level. This is using the political process in the correct way.
The good cop and the bad cop.
And one last comment about the mayor emeritus of Santa Cruz, Mike Rotkin. Don't take away from this gentleman.
The shadow mayor?
The very dramatic positive contributions that he's made to the community and continues to make.
Please, give me one.
One?
One.
I'll tell you, rent control. Mr. Rotkin was very early a supporter of rent control.
He has not supported rent control since 1982 when it was narrowly defeated.
He was, if you look back, no, he was very early out the gate supporter.
Right, but since 1982, he has made no attempt to put rent
control.
Well,
that's his prerogative. He's done other things.
How can you call him a supporter?
He hasn't
done anything in 16 years. I mean, I'm sorry, I can't agree with you on that one, Bob. But
you're twisting something, Robert. When it came out, he was there. That takes courage. And there's another point about Mr. Rotkin, and I've said this before, I believe, on your show. Mike Rotkin was one of the few politicians that ever said anything about D.A.R. Danner during the time cards incident.
But he hasn't said much.
Okay.
But
I
appreciate
once
your
again
thoughts.
Credit where credit's due.
Right.
And you're I think a lot of what's asked for by exuberant activists is extremely unrealistic.
Well,
and
demand
impractical,
the impossible.
And it
demand
burns bridges. All it does is burn bridges and make people uptight.
All right, Bob. Well, let's continue this conversation. And thank you for calling. Give your number again if folks want to call in to help with the
rent control. 457-2670.
You can get a fine button, and the number again is
457-2670. Robert, thanks.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye bye.
Brayton, I think you had you were champing at the mic, so to speak. What did you want to say?
Well, I first of all, I would like to say that I do definitely support the idea of rent control. It is needed. First, I think Mr. LaMonica hit the nail on the head when he talked about the idea that it takes money in advertising, and I think that's the essential thing. Actually, one of my editors, his name is Frenchie, and his first name is Robert. I forget his last name. We used to call him Frenchie. Said to me once that a newspaper must first be a business before it can report the news. And I don't think, first of all, maybe I am an exuberant activist, I think actually I am, that the idea of a media supported by objective truth is not unreasonable. In fact, I think it is totally feasible. You want to see the Sentinel report good news, take away its advertisers. You want to, you know, if the Sentinel is doing such a great job of covering what's going on with rent control and the whole thing of displacement, why aren't they down doing a Bay Living story in the flats, talking to people who are going to be dispossessed and putting their views in instead of just the city councils?
Mm-hmm.
I think that right there just shows you how far removed the news that appears in the Sentinel is from the truth, and there's no excuse for that. There's no compromise for that. You're programming the public with lies.
Now, we also have an additional interloper in the studio. I don't know how I could describe him. How would you describe yourself, interloper?
Crazy.
More specific, please.
Well, anyway, I now have a radio name given to me by the infamous V-Man, and that is Fellow Worker Will.
Fellow Worker Will is with us.
So I'm in a house, and I've been champing at the mic, too. I think one additional thing that I think Brayton neglected to mention is if the Sentinel does such a great job, why do they need all this advertising money coming in? Don't they have enough quality reporting and brilliant editorial staff to really write the kind of paper that engages people in the community and makes them want to read it instead of use it for toilet paper, which I have on occasion?
Kitty litter, actually, is a better use. Go ahead.
There's a real reason why that is, and that's because that's not the way the media is structured. The reason why just good reporting these days doesn't get you money is because they're not selling to the subscribers. The money that newspapers get from their subscribers is negligible, almost insubstantial when compared to the tremendous amount of money that they get from their advertisers. That's where their bread and butter is. And subscriptions don't really mean all. They go all, you know, off on how subscriptions are important in the newsroom, but in the end, where's their money coming from? The advertisers. So, of course, they can't do good reporting. That's true, except those subscriptions that sell to the advertisers. But, of course, they're already considering them.
Well, let's respond to the caller's request for a number by The Band, B-A-N-N-E-D. This is actually not the pre-recorded tape that I actually was fortunate enough to get from The Band. They gave me this tape, and I gave them a donation. It's called the Fuck the Fascist USA, with a dollar sign on the S. But it's here's a song from the streets that they sang on the streets of Santa Cruz, and you're going to hear them talking about it and then doing some singing.
Author of these songs is
John the Baker.
Thank you, John. Have you been told to tone down your singing, or are you just a softer one than the last one?
Huh?
Just a softer one than the last one, right?
Softer one than the last one.
It's softer in volume because that's what it seems. Sounds like this is a quieter one than the one before.
What was the one before?
Damn, I don't know, but it was.
I'm drunk. Every day by noon, I'm fucking in a hotel room. That one? Or,
could have been.
Attitude?
Could have been attitude. I mean, you know, it's got the same intensity.
No, I haven't even told to turn it down. I've been arrested before for singing my songs.
I'm with Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
What's your name?
I'm Robert.
Robert? I'm John the Baker. I contacted this guy, I think his name's Vinny.
Yeah.
About doing a benefit for you guys. We're on tour. This
great.
Is some information about me and us, the band. It's our tape. You can have that.
Cool. Here's a donation.
Awesome.
Give you a donation here. So before we go on, your name is?
I got a good one.
John the Baker.
And John, how long have you been on tour?
We've been on tour officially for about 2 weeks, but we've been living. Before that, we moved to North Carolina and been living in a rehearsal studio for like the last 2.5 months. Recording and tightening up, and we got a female singer that's working with us now, Tonya. She's awesome, and so we feel like we've been on the road for a really long time, but really it's been about 2 weeks. We played.
How long has your band been together? What's it called?
5 years. We're called The Band. We're from Woodstock, New York, and
you're the ones who are behind that riot, eh?
No, we left because of the corporate mentality that started.
$4 for a bottle of water?
Yeah, you know,
and we'll dump out your water as you come in?
Yeah, that's what. See, the tour we're on is called Fuck the Fascist USA.
Uh-huh.
And one of my biggest issues politically, the industry that I focus on the most is the music industry. That's like one of the biggest industries in the world. And they're very fascist, they're very corporate, and they only care about money. They hang a carrot out for musicians, and then nobody ever gets to eat the carrot. So Fuck the Fascist USA tour is about eating the carrot every day. living life and being alive, you know, being free within, you know, and so the oppressors don't even come by anymore. The last band we had was called Slimy Penis Breath, and we combated everybody, and the cops came and arrested us every time we played. But
when did Slimy Penis Breath disperse? Or when did you change your
band? Last, like, January.
And were you ever in Santa Cruz playing?
No, I lived in Santa Cruz not in Santa Cruz, but in, like, San Jose and Palo Alto and Oakland throughout the 1980s. And the music that I write is really born here from Lockheed Actions and United Technologies. I was one of the primary organizers for the United Technologies Conversion Project in San Jose. And I was an organizer for Bay Area Peace Test. And I also worked for, like, you know, moderate groups like Campaign California and National Toxics Campaign, the Silicon Valley Toxics Coalition. And I organized a lot of people to do Redwood Summer and... You know,
or against the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban here.
Absolutely.
On the floor.
Go to sleep with the homeless, wake up in jail. What a fascist fairy tale. You too can be poor and hungry and oppressed by the man who wants only rich people to walk the streets.
And how, any songs on that subject? Or? If not, why not?
Well, I do this song that's written by Mark Levy. You know Mark Levy? A good friend of mine.
Well, there ain't no sitting in the city of Santa Cruz with its redwood trees and its ocean views.
I do 30 days in the county jail.
Santa Lawrence.
Yeah, exactly.
I spent 27 days in the county jail for doing the same thing in San Francisco back in 1996.
That's a long time, man.
Food not bombs.
Yeah. Food not bombs.
But she wasn't the first. She was the second. Brian Staley was before her. But then she was part of SWAP. We were all part of the same group, Soup Without a Permit. And who is this person who's...
This is Tonya.
I am Tonya.
You are Tonya. Tonya,
yes.
Do you have anything you wish to sing for us immediately? Prep the two of you together.
Fuck the fascist USA.
It's on the tape, but let's do that anyway.
Okay? A live rendition of Fuck the Fascist USA.
Yeah.
Or perhaps Fuck the Fascist Santa Cruz, if you will.
All right.
Yeah.
It's all one and the same a lot of times.
Yeah.
So just 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. You're an all-American man, born and raised by the Ku Klux Klan. A fascist Nazi was some to say, working here in the USA. Your Pepsi, Coke, your Tipper Gore, you're the killer within that goes to war. That's all I got, there's nothing to say. So fuck the fascist USA. You're a puppet on a string. You're an all-American man, born and raised by the Ku Klux Klan. A fascist Nazi with something to say, working here in the USA. Your Pepsi, Coke, your Tipper Gore, the killer within that goes to war. That's all I got, something to say. So fuck the fascist USA. Puppet on a string. You're a puppet on a string. Puppet on a string. You're a puppet on a string. You're a puppet on a string. You're a puppet on a string. You're an all-American man, born and raised by the Ku Klux Klan, a fascist Nazi, some to say, working right here in the USA. Your Pepsi, Coke, your Tipper Gore, your kill within that goes to war. That's all I got. There's nothing to say. So fuck the
fascist USA.
Puppet on a string, you're a 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 puppet on a string, and it makes me sick to see you on the street.
Whoa.
That was the band, and I'm actually going to read a bit about the band, but we have a caller who is hearkening back to a previous caller, and this is a caller who has earned a great deal of prestige with her articulate speeches at City Council. Eleanor, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm calling in response to the caller, I think it was Bob LaMonica, who gave the Sentinel the out, saying that... they cater to the advertisers because they're the only paper in town. That's a little backwards. One might say the advertisers have to cater to the Sentinel because they're the only mainstream paper in town, and they need the Sentinel. So I don't think that saying that the Sentinel needs them, and that's why they cater, the way they, that's why they report the way they do. It's, I think it's totally wrong.
I see.
I think basically the reverse theory that the advertisers need them. Where else are they going to go? And so whatever they're writing, they're not doing it for them. I don't know if they're doing it for any much good at all. And I really appreciate your live guest. It's so wonderful to hear what we all know from someone who's witnessed it and lived it.
Well, we actually still have our guest in the studio.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Do you want to comment on any of this before he goes?
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I'm just going to...
Can you hear him?
Yes.
I just would like to say that you're right, though, that the advertisers do depend on the Sentinel.
I only heard part of it.
The advertisers depend on the Sentinel, he says.
But
exactly.
At the same time, though, the Sentinel certainly does depend on the advertisers. And like I said, the indisputable truth is that a primary means of their money comes from those advertisers. And if they lost
those
advertisers...
There's no question. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. But I do agree with you also that they tend to have their own ideas on what they think should be reported on and how it should be reported. And I don't think that they really have anything to do with their advertisers. I really don't.
I can disagree with that just from knowledge.
I see.
Yeah, the ideas of what they think should be reported and how it should be reported, you'll find are the exact same ideas that the advertisers are having themselves. And that, in fact, it really is the advertisers that are determining that.
Do you have any examples of that, Brayden?
Sure. Well, just in the case of editorials particularly demonstrate this. There is so much effort and thought, as I said earlier, into how editorials are written. Of course, the Sentinel and the people doing those have the right to express their own opinions, but they're tailoring their opinions to the advertisers, and I've heard them say before on numerous occasions, and I'm sorry that I cannot think back to specific times, they all blur into one big one.
Yeah.
But where they say, we don't want to lose advertisers.
Yeah.
So
well,
we're gonna,
I can see that clearly in their editorials, that they're doing exactly what you described earlier.
Uh-huh.
One can read them, and you can see that they're doing exactly that. I have to get off the phone. I just wanted to put my 2 cents worth in and say that I'm so thrilled you're still on the air, Bathrobe Spear.
Thank you very much, and let's keep those speeches coming at the city council.
There
is a city council meeting next Tuesday for all you council hounds.
They beat me down.
Ooh.
I'm not. I really can't handle
Ooh.
It for a while.
There will be a council meeting at 1 o'clock on Tuesday. It's a special meeting almost solely for the purpose of appointing the final Citizens Police Review Board member, Cynthia Matthews, appointee. God help us all. We'll talk more about that.
Okay, please do. Thank you. God bless.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I want to thank our guest, Brayden Tompkins, for coming into the studio. You're welcome to hang out if you want, Brayden. I'm going to roll with some more business, but please stay or go or do both.
Thank you, people of Santa Cruz. Keep Free Radio alive.
And you may be hearing Brayden as a regular broadcaster if our very select extremely discriminating selection programming committee allows this young pup on the air. And we'll see just what happens with that. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3 FM. All phone lines are open into our new studio, 427-3772. Voicemail for those of you who are too shy to go on the air but have messages you want to present to us, 427-4523. For those of you who don't like the sound of your own voice but still want to send us something, Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And for the computer nerds among you, email address frsc@cruzio.com. Again, the most direct number is 427-3772. And we were playing some rather grungy stuff from the streets, which I thought was kind of refreshing. I haven't heard anything like that since Skidmark Bob and Just Kidding were playing their songs on the streets before they kind of evaporated into parenthood. old Skidmark Bob, this is not the singer on the streets he used to be. I say bring back the old days. And whatever happened to Phil Free? I guess he shows up occasionally. Yeah, Phil, he does show up. Anyway, here's a story from the Times Herald Record from Middletown, New York. Street singer fights to keep colorful lyrics by Richard D. Errico and John Milgram. Woodstock. John the Baker Eppard is fighting for his right to swear in public. Doggone it. Eppard was singing songs from his self-promoted tape titled She Hates My Music. Apparently, so do the Woodstock police. Eppard was charged October 2nd, this was October 2nd, 1994, mind you, with disorderly conduct for singing songs laced with swear words and sexual references on the Woodstock Village Green. Ironically, one of the songs, Woodstock Punks, criticizes people who hang out on Woodstock's Village Green doing drugs. He had his day in court last night. Eppard pleaded not guilty. The case has been adjourned for some time later this month. The accounts of what happened that autumn day vary. Police say Eppard was warned twice to stop singing vulgar lyrics before being arrested by mounted police officer Sean Ost. Ost warned Eppard twice to stop singing. He was like, oh my God, you can't sing that, Eppard recounted. And I go, what is it I can't sing? He goes, you know the words I mean. And so it went back and forth. Eppard sang another tune, attempted to edit out the profanities, missing a few. He was then arrested. In the world we live in, people talk that way, and they're allowed to, Eppard said. And if I want to cuss you out right now, it's legal. Ost said he was protecting the public. When you start singing obscenities in front of kids, that's where I draw the line, Ost said. He just totally did not think he did anything wrong. Eppard said there were no children present when he first began singing, but once police showed up, so did the children. Ost said there were about 8 children around. But the issue comes down to this. Do police have a right to arrest someone for using vulgarity in a public place? Under the disorderly conduct statute, they do. Under Section 240.20, Part 3 of the Penal Code, this, I remind you, is the New York State Penal Code. A person is guilty of disorderly conduct if, quote, in a public place, he uses abusive or obscene language or makes an obscene gesture. Cussing was outlawed on Tuesday in Raritan, New Jersey. That's Tuesday 5 years ago, it looks like, where a borough council approved an ordinance that would prohibit profanity. That law gained national publicity, and Raritan Mayor Anthony DeSicco has been criticized. Naturally, we have people saying, Mayor, you're taking away our rights. What I'm trying to do is to provide civility, tranquility, and peace. People don't have to be subjected to this obscenity and vulgarity. DeSicco, who has drawn the wrath of civil libertarians, said it was right that Eppard was arrested. They've said we're going to financially take you apart, DeSicco said. And the New York Civil Liberties Union was not too happy about Eppard's arrest. I think that the arrest, in our opinion, is unconstitutional, said the NYCLU executive director, Norman Siegel. If the guy called us, we would represent him. Of all places, the last place one would imagine this would happen would be Woodstock, internationally known as the Community of Freedom. And this is a story in a paper about 5 years old, October 13, 1994, the Times Herald Record. But there's a happier story 3 years after that in a paper, the same paper, Thursday, January 16, 1997. $20,000 has cussin' minstrel singin'. Woodstock, how do you shut up a foul-mouthed folk singer? Give him $20,000 and hope he'll get the message. John the Baker Eppard received a town of Woodstock check worth $20,000 with his name. It cleared this week. Eppard and the town settled out of court on Eppard's $1 million lawsuit. Remember Eppard? He's the one arrested in October 1994 for swearing on the Village Green. He was singing songs from his self-promoted tape titled She Hates My Music. Police hated his music, too, and charged him with disorderly conduct. Police said his songs were laced with swearing and sexual references and shouldn't be sung near children. But Woodstock Town Justice Sidney Slayton ruled 3 months later that the section of law used to arrest Eppard was unconstitutional. After his arrest, Eppard remained unapologetic, defending his vulgarity. If I want to cuss you out right now, it's legal. I think the songs are offensive, he said yesterday, but they're supposed to be. The music industry and military-industrial complex are obscene, and that's what I'm singing about. Woodstock supervisor Tracy Kellogg said the town believed it had a strong case against Eppard, but decided to pay out of court to avoid legal costs. the way similar costs seem to be working, similar cases seem to be working, there will be a sympathy factor that would come into play. She said, I believe in individual rights, but I also believe that there has to be some individual restraint in terms of how you handle yourself in a public forum when there are children around. The last thing I want is them singing songs about personal body parts. Besides disorderly conduct, Eppard was charged with resisting arrest, a misdemeanor. Boy, this sounds so much like Santa Cruz, I just don't know what to say. Eppard's lawyer, Russell A. Schindler, said if Eppard had been convicted, he could have been sentenced to 1 year in jail. As it was, he spent 6 hours in jail. That means Eppard was paid $3,333.33 for each hour he spent behind bars. We think $20,000 is fair compensation for what he went through, Schindler said. Norman Siegel, executive director of the New York Civil Liberties Union, also was pleased by the settlement. Hopefully this sends a message to people throughout the state that people do have First Amendment rights to express themselves, even if we don't agree with the choice of language, he said. And Woodstock, of all places in America, should understand this. As again, $20,000 has cussin' minstrel singing by Richard DeRico in the Times-Herald Record. That's apparently the Middletown, New York paper near Woodstock, New York. And we're singing about the adventures of the group, the band, the B-A-N-N-E-D band, which is now doing a tour called the Fuck the Fascist USA Tour.
And that sounds like
it'll be a Citizens Police Review Board. Lots of interesting stuff on the agenda, including Chief Belcher holding out and refusing to pass on the original inquiries that he's been getting. That's his classification for the kinds of sort of low-grade complaints that he doesn't bother to forward to the Citizens Police Review Board. But the Citizens Police Review Board asked for them anyway, and he's refusing to give them. Plus, of course, the question of the independent investigator, Diane Christensen, the first time in Santa Cruz history when the Citizens Police Review Board is actually hiring somebody independently to investigate, not just peering over the shoulders of those boys in blue who we know are so fair and vigilant about investigating their fellow officers. That's all.
Nobody thunk it. Nobody knew.
Hi, no, this is Carl Reed. Fill it in for the not a one and only.
Cows are one.
Uncle Dennis.
He hid in the forest, read books with great zeal. He loved Che Guevara, a revolutionary.
I couldn't find the theme song for Dennis, but it'll be coming up. And tonight, I'll be playing music from the 60s, 70s, a little bit of the 80s. Hope you enjoy it.
Cow doll drums. He moved, we must fight, escape or we'll die. Cows gathered around, because the stakes were so high.
Free Radio Santa Cruz!
Free radio.
Music should be free, and so should radio. This is Ian from Fugazi.
This is Jello Biafra.
Radioactive.
This is Boots Riley from The Coup.
Hey, this is Emily from the Indigo Girls.
Hello there, this is Tom Morello.
Peace, be still. This is Azeem checking in from Oakland, California.
This is Jim Page.
Yo, what the deal? This is Immortal Technique.
This is so-and-so from 15.
This is Michelle Shuck.
This is Mike Park.
This is Thomas from Striking New Air.
And whenever I'm running from the police, I gotta find out where to go. I listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz.
101.1
Freak Radio.
Freak Radio.
On your FM dial has been successfully flying the skull and crossbones for the past 10 years.
Amen! FM-alooyah!
Freak Radio Santa Cruz is a vital part of this country's independent media.
Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. Live stream online at www.freakradio.org.
Music should be free. So should radio.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. Remember to tune in from the cream to the dregs with Uncle Dennis every Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Music from the 60s and the 70s brought to you on Free Radio Santa Cruz and nowhere else.